All right, this is Steeler Country. I am your host, Tony, alongside my two co-hosts, Mike and Joe. Guys, the Steelers win. They've already clinched a playoff spot. The Baltimore wins, so the Steelers are in as the 5 seed. They will play Denver next week. We are going to analyze that game against Cleveland. I think we all have some things to say about it. But I want to start this podcast this way. It has become very I've now listened to 48 hours of sports media talk, right? You know, and during this time, obviously the media likes to come up with the nice playoff storylines, especially that first week of the playoffs. You got to find the media darling, the potential upset, right? What's become very interesting to me over these 48 hours has been that when they talk about who could upset who, what's the big upset we're looking at? What I'm hearing the most is, well, if you look at Denver versus Pittsburgh, you've got a Pittsburgh team with Ben Roethlisberger, a little gimpy. They got no Ryan Clark now. Mendenhall's going to be out for the year. Woodley hasn't played, you know, in how long. He's going to be playing his first game back now. They've got, you know, Pouncey's in and out. They play down to bad opponents. They're going to be playing on the road where they've only won, you know, 5 of 8 games this year. Mike, what is going on with the media all of a sudden coming back to the Tim Tebow bandwagon after losing 3 straight, and not maybe saying that that the Steelers are going to lose to Denver, but they're saying this might be a close game.
That's pretty strange. I mean, it sounds like they're really trying to sell it. I haven't heard a lot of that. I haven't heard much of talk radio over the last couple of days. You know, what I heard on the NFL radio was totally opposite. They couldn't think of a way that Denver would win where they wouldn't be surprised. But I guess, you know, when you put all that together, just what you said, and then you factor in that the Steelers have played close games against some bad teams and, you know, pulled it out, but found a way to play down to the competition. You know, who knows? It's the playoffs. And we know last year, it was last year, right? The Saints went out to the 8-8 Seahawks.
Right.
And as defending Super Bowl champions. So, I mean, anything can happen. It's going to be surprising. If something like that happens, it would be surprising.
Joe, is there any chance in your mind that this Steeler team, given it's – okay, it's got some – you know, yeah, they do play down to opponents. And, yes, they have some injuries. But they are playing Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos, a team that has struggled for the past 3 weeks. And the Steelers have the best defense, statistically speaking – yards per game.
Yeah, look, I don't know how you watch 16 of these Pittsburgh Steelers games and figure any game is a safe bet win. I just don't know how you do that. So I think anybody that's saying, well, there's no way the Steelers go out and lose this game, I think they're kidding themselves. I think they're not paying attention to what they're not acknowledging what's taken place all year long. I mean, you can go back to the Seahawks game, in week 2, or you can go to week 17.
Wait.
And you can look at the,
we at shut the, out the Seahawks.
At the, I'm sorry, the Colts game.
The Colts, okay.
The Colts game in week 3. And you can go right to the Cleveland Browns game in week 17. You know, look, the Steelers don't blow out crappy opponents, you know, every time. Sometimes they do.
Right.
But this season, I think more often than not, maybe a few more times than not, they play bad opponents like the Broncos close.
Right.
And that's been our frustration all year long. So I sincerely hope that that's not the case. I honestly don't think it's going to be the case because Denver's playing some pretty crappy ball these last few weeks. Their defense was exposed by New England as not a very good defense, and I think our offense should be able to take advantage of it. To address the points that you raised about, you know, new injuries, the injury to Mendenhall doesn't really damage our running game. Our running game is not all that great anyway. And we're still capable of running the ball, with Redmond. And you know, so as long as he got his fumble rooskies out of the way last week, then, you know, we really shouldn't miss a beat on offense, against the Broncos. So my biggest concern for the Steelers this week is having to go west to play a game. That being said, the Steelers have played well in Denver as of late. In 2009, one of the worst Steelers seasons under Mike Tomlin, that was probably their best game of that year. Was the trip to Denver on a Monday night game, I think it was.
Was that the three-peat game?
That was the three-peat game.
That was the game after which Mike and I were talking three-peat. We had only one Super Bowl in 2008, but we were talking three-peat.
We figured right, well, 2009 was a lock, and it was just clearly a matter 2000, of, yeah, we clearly maintain.
Right. 2009 yeah. had become a done deal, yeah, and now the deal. Question yeah. is, can we carry this into 2010?
Right.
And we did manage to get it into 2010.
And that's right.
The 2009 part.
Sure, 2009 looked really bad. Our prediction looked really bad. But then in 2010, it wasn't so far off, was it?
No, and 2009 was looking good at the time that we said it. We didn't know that we were going to go on a 5-game losing streak, give up 2 returns for touchdowns
in
Kansas City. I mean, it's all these insane things that happened.
I'm getting us off track.
I'm not going to stop on that because that crap still goes on, not necessarily with special teams.
Right, but that's where I want to.
That still goes on. We still have incredible things happen to this team. Okay, so that you lose to the likes of Kansas City,
we really don't.
Which this team, in 2009 is no.
We find a way to win.
The Broncos, right. not that, even as good as the
that's
today's
the. But that's the point. We don't find a way to lose this year. That's the difference, right?
Other than San Francisco.
Well, even San Francisco. I mean, yes, the Steelers lost to San Francisco, but that's a 13-3 team. That's the number 2 seed in the NFC, right? You know, they didn't lose a lot this year. In fact, every team we lost to made the playoffs. And every team we lost to is either a 1, 2, or 3 seed. Look, to address your point about the Steelers playing down, yes, they do. Occasionally this team, especially on the road, will play a tight game against a team that is inferior. But the point is that they win. They always win those games. They did all season long. And what, you know, to me going into this game, could the Steelers play a close game with Denver? Yes. Will they lose? No. Do I have concerns about this team going into the playoffs? Absolutely. I just don't think that those concerns that I have are going to manifest themselves against the Denver Broncos team that's going to have a real trouble moving the football, especially through the air. And then a defense that has been shown in the last couple weeks to be susceptible to being spread out, which is what the Steelers can do easily to you, especially with Emmanuel Sanders now being healthy again. I think, you know, the media is kidding themselves if they really feel like this team, if the Steelers team is going to lose. I mean, yeah, crazy things can happen. And if Ben were to go out there and throw 3 picks and get sacked a bunch and the defense were to give up long drives, I guess you could envision a scenario, but it's a scenario which has not happened yet this season.
Well, that's the thing that we're overlooking. You just kind of hit on it there, is that anytime an inferior team beats a better team, typically it's due to turnovers. So if they win the turnover battle and have a +3 on the Steelers, which is very likely based on the Steelers' history this season of being in the negative on turnovers. So, you know, that could be something that would play into the Broncos' hands.
The Steelers lost the turnover battle all year and are 12-4.
Still won.
So the fact that they're going to put the ball on the ground, turn it over, doesn't in this particular team doesn't mean they're going to lose, but it does mean they're going to play a close game, which means that you can lose to a crappy team, which has been the case time and again all year. There were too many close games because of too much, you know, you guys like to buy into this win ugly, throw style points out the window jargon, otherwise known as sloppy ball.
Right. Well, Tomlin had a great quote today. He was asked about the game. He said, you know, do you have any concerns about, you know, the game against Cleveland? You know, cause you guys only were able to, you know, you're only able to put up 13 points. And he said, no, we won, you know, and I think that's the Tomlin mentality. And I've been trying to tell you guys all year, you know, buy into this because It's going to be like this all year, and you're going to miss out at the end of the year when you look back and you go, wow, the Steelers had a great year. You're going to go, no, actually, I was pissed off the entire year that they couldn't win pretty, right? And that happened to me last year. Look, I totally bought into that. I was so pissed off after the Steelers nearly lost to Buffalo. But really, at the end of the day, did the Steelers almost losing to Buffalo have any play any significance, you know, down the line? And that's what I'm trying to say now is don't go back and look at, yes, the Steelers did nearly blow it against Indy in Indy, right, which would have been a very embarrassing loss. But they didn't. So
we're sounding kind of negative here. I mean, you started off the podcast by asking how can the Steelers lose can they lose? And we said, you know, this is how they can, or at least I did. Right. I mean, so I laid out how they could lose, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, I think I said that too. Really don't expect that to be the
case. So we should talk about what we expect to happen.
That's what I want to do.
Positive here.
Right. So I kind of want to get past the game against Denver, right? Preview that early, get over it, and then let's talk about the big picture in the playoffs here, right? So, yes, how do the Steelers win this game? I think it's pretty simple. You shut down Denver's running game, you make Tim Tebow throw the ball, you play tight man-to-man coverage, force him to force it in there, and, you know, offensively, score points. Get a 14-0 lead early if you can. Try some deep passes to Antonio Brown and Mike Wallace. You can afford to waste possessions in this game by going 3-and-out but trying deep passes or, you know, maybe getting sacked. I mean, look, it could look ugly early if as long as you're trying to put up big points early. Because if we get up to a 14-0 lead, it's over. I can't see Denver outside of crazy kick return, punt return, interception, stupid stuff, scoring more than 10 points. And I don't think most Steelers fans can see that. So I say score early and, you know, get it over with.
And you like the idea of taking chances early. We could go down 7-0 based on a fluke play, as opposed to just playing conservative, running it, punting, and then waiting for them to make a mistake.
No, because I think that in that way you play into what Tebow wants to do, which is let's keep it close. Just give me a chance at the end. I don't want to have Tebow have any chance at the end. Not that I think that Tebow could do it against our defense, but you know, what's the point?
Rather not see it.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think? What's your recipe for a Steeler win against your boy? Now you've watched your boy all year. You've been very closely watching Tebow. What has changed for Tebow? He went 7-1 as a starter, and then finishes the year 0-3.
Well, I think what happens to a lot of rookie quarterbacks is defenses, you know, figure them out. Mm-hmm. Early, you know, when a new quarterback is put into a game, especially, you know, mid-game, where the opposing defense has studied the tendencies and came up with a defensive scheme for the starting quarterback. So now comes the backup quarterback in relief.
Right.
So it's a total surprise. The defense hasn't, you know, studied this guy. They haven't, you know, and it may be in Tebow's case, it's a completely unknown canvas that's gonna start to get filled in.
Right.
And so that always throws defenses for a loop. They're not prepared, you know, to stop what this new quarterback likes to do, what they're good at doing. And that's a phenomenon that's repeated itself over and over again. And as a matter of fact, it even repeated itself in Green Bay. And here's a whole bunch of super smart football minds all scratching their heads going, wow, how did this rookie quarterback guy, who's not really a rookie, right? He's been in a couple of years.
He's
an unknown.
Right.
How did he do this? Well, right. I mean, he's different than Aaron. I mean, he did kind of the same thing Aaron Rodgers did, but he's a different guy. So I think what happens is as defenses start to figure out, rookie quarterbacks and what they like to do, they figure out how to take away what they like to do. And then the survivors are the ones that find a way to work around that. When you come and take away what I like to do, I find something else that I can do and I hurt you with that.
Right.
Okay. And Tebow hasn't figured that out yet. When they take this away from me, when they take away what I like to do, can I do something else that they're exposed to now and hurt them with that? And now the defense has to choose. Take away this, I hurt you with that. Take away that, I hurt you with this. Okay, so the great quarterbacks are able to do that. We'll see about you know, Tim Tebow, but he's at the point now in his career, or in his development, where, you know, he's in shutdown mode. He's got to search. And, you know, in my opinion, the jury's still out on whether his coaches and his team really want him to succeed, in Denver. I think they do want him to win the playoff game. Don't misunderstand me. But I don't think they're capable of beating the Steelers. The Steelers are only capable of handing the game over to Denver.
Right.
And by that, you know, it's all the things we talked about. The one thing we didn't talk about, and the one thing that's another distinct possibility is the Steelers move the ball at will, like they did against Cleveland, get it down to the goal line, and then throw an interception, or like they did against San Francisco. Right. That's the way. Special teams and turnovers after long drives that should be points, and you just wind up scoring nothing, not even a field goal, and giving the ball back. It's like the long drive and the offensive success didn't even happen.
Right. All right. So, but I think we're all in agreement here. We expect a Steeler win, whether it be, you know, the amount of points by which we win, again, as we've learned from Tomlin for 5 years, doesn't matter, right?
So let's break this down a little bit. You got Denver, they're 31st in the pass in passing offense, and the Steelers are number one against the pass.
Right.
I mean, you know, is there anything that Denver is going to be able to do in passing? Or are they even going to try to pass? They're number one in the league in rushing, and by a pretty, they're like 164 yards a game, and the next best team's around 150.
Right.
So that's pretty dominant
pretty
in rushing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but the Steelers are like eighth against the rush.
Right.
So, I mean, what kind of defense are we going to play? Is there any way we can create turnovers? I mean, they're not going to even try to pass the ball that much, probably.
I think that if you had to look at a game the Steelers played this year that is going to be most like what we're going to face against Denver, it would be the St. Louis game. But if you look back at the box score for St. Louis, right? They had over 170 yards running against us. Their quarterback was something like 9 of 27 for 90 yards or something. And they put up 0 points. And that's what I think is going to happen in this game. I don't expect that we're going to go – there's going to be a lot of three and outs. I do expect that Tebow and them are going to run on us a little bit. You know – We've taken a step back there. We're no longer a dominant run defense. We're still really good, you know, and we're getting better, and having Woodley back in there is going to help a lot.
But yeah, is there any concern, though, against the option?
Oh, no.
You know, our defense playing the option?
Well, I mean, look, it depends on how – earlier in the year I would have said absolutely yes, this is going to be a huge problem. Playing Denver in week 5 would not have been a good matchup for us. Harrison and Woodley at that point were playing very sloppy – gap assignments. In fact, the entire defense was, and that's why against Ray Rice and Arian Foster, we gave up a ton of yards, a ton of rushing yards in those games. We seemed to clean it up a little bit thereafter, and really ever since. Ray Rice had that one big run that was called back for holding, and ever since then, we've done relatively well against Ray. I think Steven Jackson had 100 yards, Maurice Jones-Drew had about 90-something. So again, a step back, but I think as long as everybody plays their assignments right and you know, Palmol is going to be out there to disrupt that stuff too, I expect that with the Steeler defense at full strength, and it will be finally, Harrison and Woodley finally going to play with each other. Let's not forget about Lamar Woodley, right? He has not played a full game since the game against the Arizona Cardinals. That's how long it's been since he played a full game.
And he was having the best year of his career.
So, I mean, is that good or bad?
Well, I think
because he's fresh, or is he going to be?
I think that's bad. I think it's bad, but it's ultimately good.
That depends on how well he is physically now.
Well, and having this game under his, you know, getting a game in to kind of get your feet back under you.
He needs to play.
Yeah, he needs to play. Yeah, and we're not facing a tough opponent. You know, it's not going to be like this is going to be some, you know. We shouldn't be in a ball game in the second quarter. So, you know, get him in there, let him get some fresh legs, and we'll see what happens in the second round. To me, that's how I look at the Woodley situation.
You know, when those running backs that you say we gave up the yards against Steven Jackson and Maurice Jones-Drew, I think that it's almost like we're giving up the run to better defend the pass. And that's the style of defense we want to play because we know passing is what wins in the league. And maybe they're doing that. But against Denver, I don't know if you get yourself in trouble if you do that. And I don't know, maybe we're going to sell out more to stop the run.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think it has a little bit to do with the defensive line. You know, that's a defensive line in transition. Casey Hampton's getting up there in age. James Ferrier's getting up there in age. I mean, those are two guys who are really stout against the run and really important to stopping our run. So I think age has a little bit to do with it. And Ryan, you can throw Ryan Clark right in that mix as well. None of those guys I think are having spectacular years like they've had in years past. I think those three guys. I don't know if the keying on stopping the pass has prevented us from stopping the run. There could be something to that. I wouldn't expect that this week we're going to go all out to stop the pass, for sure. I expect this week we're probably going to play a bump and run style, blitz Tebow a lot to try and get him to move around in the pocket. And obviously we'll keep a spy on him, but just force him to try to make a play when a play is not there and create turnovers that way. Tim Tebow is susceptible to throwing interceptions. We saw that against Buffalo. We saw that last week against, they play Kansas City and he threw a couple picks, right? So, you know, he's susceptible to throwing these interceptions, and he has the last couple of weeks. When they were winning, he wasn't throwing interceptions. But again, when they were winning, defenses didn't like you said, Joe, didn't understand, you know, what he liked to do. Once people figured out what he likes to do, and what he likes to do is to throw into wide open spaces, throw into his zone coverage, you know?
Well, he also likes to sneak out of the pocket and run.
Right.
Kansas City, if you watch the pursuit, I noticed this on a couple of plays, they would send the pressure towards him wide to his right. So that when he would move in that direction, which he likes to do, there would be two or three defenders there, in his face. And then it resulted in sacks, bad throws, interceptions, mm-hmm. fumbles.
Right.
A lot of bad things happened from that point because he didn't know what to do.
Right.
And they were taking away a tendency that was leading to success for him, and they weren't letting that develop anymore. So Kansas City definitely figured him out.
Yeah. So all right.
Any concern about Ryan Clark not playing and Mundy playing in his place?
It certainly sucks because I think Ryan Clark's a great player, and I think he's, you know, he's not the player that he once was. He's not. You know, he's not a dominant player anymore, but he's still a leader out there, you know? And I think he might even be a defensive captain. I'm not sure about that. But he's definitely a vocal leader out there, and his presence is felt in every game. So it sucks not having him out there. I think Ryan Mundy is ready to start, and he would probably start on a lot of other teams. I think he has really come into his own this season. So, in that regard, I'm excited to see Ryan Mundy play. But I don't think that there's going to be a huge drop off from Ryan Clark to Ryan Mundy because Mundy's really, really good against the runs, and that's what we're going to need in this game. So I don't have any concerns. I just, you know, it's sad that this condition that he has is going to keep him playing.
I feel bad for Clark. I don't have any concerns either. And you're right. You feel bad for him. I mean, these professional players only get X amount of playoff games,
right.
And this one gets taken away from them.
Yeah.
You know what, guys on NFL radio I heard today, they said that, you know, Polamalu's game is to bait quarterbacks into thinking they have a play, and then he sees the play and undercuts the route and makes the interception and does that all over the field all the time. We see it all the time.
Right.
So they said that, you know, for Tim Tebow, he's gonna be in some trouble. I mean, with Polamalu.
Yeah, with Polamalu. Yeah, I mean,
And the whole defense, the whole defensive scheme.
The one thing that I like about Tim Tebow, if I had to say one thing I like about Tim Tebow, is look, the guy has a really good work ethic, right? I mean, that's clear. Because you don't do the things that he's done this year. And look, I'll be the first one to tell you, I have no idea how he did half the things he did this year. But you don't do the things you did this year just on, you know, going out there and just winging it, right? I mean, you gotta know what you're looking at. You gotta have film study in there. Look, I don't think he's a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning by any stretch as far as reading a defense. But he's done a lot of work in that area. So I expect that, yeah, I mean, Troy Polamalu can make a play or two in this game, certainly, but, you know, I think Tebow, like a lot of quarterbacks, is gonna study Troy Polamalu and make sure that, Troy Polamalu does not beat you in this game. Because if you get Polamalu involved, you know, it's gonna be a long day for you. Flacco learned that plenty of times. Alright, you wanna do score predictions for Denver? I really do want to do score predictions. Mike, I'm really intrigued to hear what you're gonna, the score prediction for the Denver-Pittsburgh game this week. And you're on mute, by the way.
I'm thinking about it. I really didn't think about it yet.
Oh. You want to go to Joe? Joe, do you have a score prediction handy?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a convincing Steeler win. Not to anyone's surprise. I mean, look, this version of the Denver Broncos has not – they have no playoff experience at all. They're playing a 5 seed. But man, are they in over their heads with this 5 seed. This 5 seed is arguably to take out the 1 or the 2 seed and really might even be favored in those games.
That's interesting. We're going to talk about that.
Depending on what happens.
That's interesting.
Depending on what happens. So the Steelers, I think the Steelers win this game. I think they win it handily. Something like 27-3.
Okay.
I don't expect anything much different than that. I think, unfortunately for the Steelers and Steeler fans and how stupid the media is, if the Steelers win it any bigger than that, if it becomes a real joke real early and then it gets the score, then they're going to be all over to see how good are the Steelers and they could, you know, and it really, whether you beat the Denver Broncos by 17-3 or 27-3
right,
or 56-3, does it really matter? Does it really mean that your team is that much more ready to take on the Ravens or the Patriots on the road? No, it does not. It doesn't make any, I mean, so in that regard, you know, you can, I'm buying in a little bit to your throw style points out the window.
Hey, but that's not you're really, finally coming around.
That's not really what I'm saying.
You just rather them win close so that the media doesn't jump on
I'd
their
just
bandwagon.
Rather it be a like the Rams thing, 27-0. Nobody even talked about it. It was hardly even news.
Ho hum.
Yeah, it was like, okay, well, Steelers beat the Rams.
Business trip. Nothing. Just a business trip.
Nothing special going on there. Yeah.
So
I'm gonna just throw in my score prediction here.
Look at what they did with when the Patriots beat who'd they beat 45 the Bucks, right? And the Patriots beat the Bucks. Somebody beat the Bucks 45-3 or 40. Or maybe it was Giants.
The Niners.
Wow. So, I mean, they're all over these guys. Now, all of a sudden,
but the Bucks
Niners
were pretty good
are an offensive
then.
Juggernaut. Give me a freaking break. They are nothing of the sort. Okay? They routed a team. They routed a bad team who had a bad day.
Right.
Okay? That's probably what's going to happen. That could happen in Denver. I hope the score doesn't get that high.
Keep it. You're saying keep it low to keep the.
No, I don't want the Steelers to not score when
keep
I'm
the
saying.
Attention off of them.
I hope Denver doesn't like just totally implode. Okay.
Right.
To where you know you can't help but score 50 points.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't mind if that happened. I don't mind watching a nice, easy game where I could just sit back and enjoy the second half without having to be on the edge of my seat. I'm going to predict 26-9. I think a lot of field goals up there in Denver.
Really? Okay, so I'm going to predict a low-scoring game. I predict that the Steelers will have more opportunities at points than this. But I think, you know, Swisham has shown that he's been a little iffy on field goals lately. So, you know, and I expect that Tomlin will probably take a few too many long field goals, being that it's in Denver and you feel like you can kick longer. I think the Steelers win 14-6. I think that it will be a dominating victory, but it will be low scoring. Look, the Steelers defense on the road takes a little time to get going. You know, they've got to work Sanders back into the offense. Redmond, you know, we got to deal with Redmond instead of Mendenhall. And Clay is going to get a bigger part now. So, you know, third and short becomes a very intriguing possibility in this game, right? Because Redmond's already going to have run the ball, you know, whatever, however many carries he gets. Do you keep Redmond in there on third down, or do you bring in Clay to kind of change a pace?
I got to tell you something about Clay. I mean, I was high on Clay to start with, but in the few carries he had against Cleveland, uninspiring, man. He's a rookie, and he looked like a rookie. He was slow to the hole. He was tentative. The guy's got – I'm not saying he can't get it done.
No.
I'm saying he cannot play like he played in Cleveland, okay? That's not going to get it done. He looked like a freaking rookie. Didn't know what the hell he was doing, and they got to work on that. Because he's a big dude. That guy can be punishing, and that's exactly what this offense needs,
right,
is some punishment on the defense, okay? And that dude has got to get ahead of steam going. He cannot be tiptoeing and dancing. Imagine Steven Jackson tiptoeing, dancing around. Imagine Jerome Bettis tiptoeing around. Are you kidding me? That's like a giant waste of a play and of a giant running back.
Right. Well, I mean, let's not forget about John Clay, though. This is what, five deep at running back we're gone now?
Joe, one play against the Rams, he's on your Hall of Fame team. A few plays against the Browns, you're ready to cut him off the practice squad. Poor guy.
I said,
well,
I'm high on the guy, okay?
And, you shouldn't be. You shouldn't be high on Clay.
That's right. I shouldn't be. Because he's got work. He's got work to do.
Well, look, Clay, so John Clay is an interesting guy because this was a guy who was competing for the Heisman Trophy a couple years ago for Wisconsin, a very highly thought of back. The problem for him is that, he's big and he's slow. He's a really big guy, but he's also, he's really slow. And I don't know that you can fix speed at this level.
Slow in the open field isn't necessarily a problem. I mean, so then you're, you know, a game that could be 18 yards is only 10 yards. That's right. Not that big of a deal. But slow to the line of scrimmage, that could be a problem.
Slow to the hole.
If that's what you're talking about, that's, yeah, slow to the hole.
Yeah, slow to the hole. And that's what it seems like. You know, he doesn't it's just, yeah, plays are –
he doesn't explode.
A lot like plays designed for Hines Ward, John Clay plays are slow developing plays. Actually, I have a lot more to say about Hines Ward later in the podcast.
Yeah, let me say one more thing about the running game. Joe, you kind of touched on it. You said that you don't think we're going to miss a beat with Mendenhall being out. And that's what I thought of initially also. But then I started thinking, you know what? I mean, with only really one back in Redmond, and then maybe when Mwelly Moore gets healthy, he's your third down back, or maybe you can share time there. Clay, I'm not sure how much of a factor he's going to be just based on what you guys have just been saying. Right. So, I mean, Mendenhall's – And Joe, I know you agree with this. He's a great athlete, a great back. He has great runs a lot of times, and then sometimes he gets slowed up with the 0 and 1 yard runs that we get frustrated with. But I mean, you just take that away from the team in this playoff run. I think that could hurt us a little bit. And I have a feeling that we just might get in games where we just totally go away from the running game and go five wide a lot.
You know what? That would only happen because our offensive minds are predisposed to that position anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's why it would happen. It should not happen. What ought to happen is they ought to run Redmond, and they ought to run Redmond hard and often. And then I can put this guy Clay in. I mean, he's a big punishing guy, man. Put his butt in there. And I mean, it can't be that hard to coach a freaking running back. You can't tiptoe around in Wisconsin. What the hell did he do? He wasn't afraid in Wisconsin because he was bigger than everybody else on the other side of the ball. So he just, you know, offensive lineman throws a block or not.
Oh, you know,
he's running into whoever the hell it is, gonna punish him so he don't want to hit him next time. Well, dude, you got your welcome to the NFL. Start dishing it out, man. They ought to be able to coach the guy to explode to the freaking hole. Explode to it. Doesn't matter if the hole's there or not. Run your big, giant ass into somebody and put a hurting on him. That's the kind of running back we need. And I'll tell you what, if he can do that, it's a notch up for the playoffs.
Yeah, that's right.
Could
he had an MCL injury. He had an MCL injury right before, which is why he was not given – right. Okay, so yeah, he finished his last season of college with a bad knee injury.
So where did he get drafted?
He's not even the same guy he was.
So he was undrafted. No, he was undrafted.
Undrafted. Wow.
Yeah, he went from Heisman to undrafted.
That's why.
And is he a rookie this year?
What's that?
Is he a rookie this year?
Yeah, he's a rookie this year, yeah.
So, yeah, he's tentative because he got hurt.
Yeah.
He's got potential.
Well, you're yelling at him. Very,
got a lot
very,
of the, you want I'm to not apologize? Yelling at him. You're no, yelling I'm not going to apologize.
You want to apologize?
I'm not calling him a wuss.
All right.
Not, listen, if the knee's no good, the knee's no good. Okay? So maybe he can't play NFL ball. All right? I mean, the Steelers are giving him a shot. Okay? Here's the thing. If your knee's no good and you can't burst through the from the backfield on it, then you ain't gonna get nowhere in the NFL anyway.
We can't overanalyze this guy one game where he had.
Yeah, I don't understand why we're overanalyzing John Clay.
Well, because he's gonna play.
Well, I would like to hear more about.
We got our number one back is down.
Let's talk about.
We need somebody to step up.
Right.
That's why we're talking.
Well, the guy. I think it's gonna be Mueldy.
The guy who is going to step up, who is slated to step up, is Isaac Redman, and that's the guy who I'm intrigued by. Right. Here's why I'm interested in Isaac Redman. I would actually say there's a majority of Steeler fans out there. I don't know if it's a majority. Very close. 51-49 if it's not. That think that Isaac Redman is a better running back than Rashard Mendenhall and have thought that for a while. And this is why it's very interesting to me, and Joe's raising his hand right now, right? This is very interesting to me because, this goes back to the same thing, this goes back to like the Willie Parker era. It's weird that since Jerome Bettis, we have the Steelers fans, and I won't say if it's a majority, but there have been a contingent of them that have had the idea or the feeling that the grass is greener on the other side, right? Willie Parker's not a good running back, but, you know, we could find that guy. Rashard Mendenhall, maybe not that, maybe Redman's that guy.
It's always the next guy.
It's always the other guy that he's the guy, right? And Redman's gonna be that guy. What's interesting to me though, right, is with Redman's career numbers, career stats, 4.4 yards per carry, Mendenhall 4.1. So yes, he is a percentage better, right? In this game, where, you know, you hear people talking about, see, I told you Redman was so good. Redman averaged 4.8 yards a carry, had a good game. But when Mendenhall left the game, he too was averaging 4.8 a carry, right?
Right.
I'm not saying that Isaac Redman is a bad running back by any stretch. I expect that Isaac Redman is going to – I think it's silly for media types to say that this – not having Mendenhall is going to be some kind of huge problem for the Steelers offense. It is absolutely not going to be that. I think Isaac Redman and Mendenhall are going to do the exact same, and they have. If you look at it, Isaac Redman started one game this year. Actually, I'm going to pull this up because I had this before. Isaac Redman actually started a game this year. You'll remember that Mendenhall was hurt against Tennessee. So Redman had to start that game. Look at those weeks.
Redman definitely seems like a back. That he just seems like he plays big enough to be able to carry a team and to play an entire game into the fourth quarter, getting first downs, and getting the 100-yard mark without a 30-yard run. You know what I mean?
So, right.
So that's why it seems like for the people that are on Redman's side and think he may be better than Mendenhall, that's what they're thinking. They're thinking he's more durable and he's going to be the more, a more solid back throughout the entire course of a game.
That's what I'm getting at, is it's this kind of Bettis effect, right, where you want – Steeler fans want to see – they have like this vision in their mind of what a running back is after watching Jerome Bettis for whatever long he lasted, 10 years, right, which is a punishing – drag guys down the field type of back, right? So the Mendenhall stat line for this year has been what? 15 carries, about 50 yards a game, something like that. He didn't even run for 1,000 this year. But if you go back to the one game that Isaac Redman started this year, his stat line in that game was 15 carries, 49 yards, average 3.3 a carry. It was actually Jonathan Dwyer in that game who had a really good game. He bursted one for 76 and ended up running for over 100 in that game. I think that if you think Redman is better than Mendenhall, I hope you're right, because the Steelers could certainly use some kind of a push on their running game. But what I really think though is that it's really the same, and it comes down to the offensive line, first of all. And Redman and Mendenhall are basically the same guy. Mendenhall's better at finding a hole and making guys miss, whereas Redman's a better guy for, like you guys said, running through a guy and dragging the pile. But at the end of the day, the results end up the same. It's really just about the style of play that you you know, that you prefer.
I think it comes down to this. The Steelers, they choose to pass the ball. They choose to be a passing team. Mm-hmm. So either Mendenhall or Redmond, you give them 15 carries, they're going to get somewhere between 50 and 60, 70 yards.
Right.
If you gave either of them 24, 27 carries, I think they can, both of them would approach 100 or maybe get over 100, meaning that, you know, those later carries, you know, sustained drives, and it gets easier to run in the fourth quarter when you're winning anyway. So, but we choose not to do that. And Joe, you touched on this earlier. This is what you fear, is that they're going to just use Mendenhall being out as an excuse to throw the ball more and be in five wide sets more. They'll try. I see them trying Redmond, some, and if it's not, you know, highly successful early, especially in games, if we get the chance to play Baltimore and New England, I see him giving up on it and just going five wide. It's all you, Ben. Let's see what you got.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is what you can probably expect to happen from this mindset. But to address you know, Tony's point, which is the number of people who think that, you know, that Redmond is a better back than Mendenhall. I think Mendenhall is a more talented athlete, actually, than Mendenhall. I think Redmond is more likely to sustain a drive. So when we talk about, you know, who's going to get this many average yards per carry, it's not about that. Because if it's 100 yards and 50 of them come on one run, and then the other 50 come on the remaining 24 runs, well, that's not sustaining drives, is it? Redmond is the kind of guy, Mike said it earlier, who could run a ball and carry a team into the fourth quarter. Redmond is the kind of guy who's gonna bang on you for three quarters. And when you get to the fourth quarter and you have your 11-point lead, okay, that you want to nurse and not give the ball back, the best defense is to keep your offense with the ball. And so when you want to do that, you put this punishing back and you put the ball in his hands and you let him continue to pound on linebackers, defensive linemen, defensive backs and safeties who don't want to get hit by him again. That's the kind of back I think he is. I don't know that because we don't really get to see him do what he does more than a few times a game. So whether he could do that.
Well, we did see it for a whole game.
We saw it against Tennessee and he didn't do very well.
Right.
So maybe he's not that guy, but that's the kind of running game that I want. We already know that Mendenhall is not that.
But if you can't.
Okay? Mendenhall fits this offense because this is a finesse offense. That's what it's designed to be.
See, that is where I think you're, like, you lose course. Because, like, the idea that Mendenhall doesn't drive a pile. We saw that against Cleveland. He was running really well. He was averaging 5 yards a carry, and he was running over guys. He is a very hard guy to tackle. And that's what Steelers fans don't want to admit, right, is that, yes, he dances too much in the hole sometimes because he wants to find a big play, and he gets stopped behind the line. But so does Redmond, and so does Mwaldi, and so does everybody else that runs behind an offensive line that's not very good.
True. Okay, yeah. I agree.
The other thing, though, that we don't give – that, Joe, we're not giving Mendenhall credit on is that – he doesn't get the chance to get that 19th, 20th, 25th carry to show you that he can carry the team in the fourth quarter because this offense isn't designed to do that. And he's the starting running back on this offense. So we see him, you know, 16 times a year thinking that he's not that guy and he just doesn't get the chance to be that guy.
Well, I want to make a clarification here because I'm not saying that this man doesn't run hard. I'm not saying that he doesn't play with heart. I'm not saying that he doesn't play with the same guts that Jerome Bettis did on every single down. That's not what I'm saying. This guy is one of the hardest running backs. He doesn't avoid hits. He doesn't run out of bounds. He challenges guys. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying that's not the style of back that he is. He is a fast guy. He's a big play guy. He's a big chunks running back. On a big chunked offense. He fits exactly what this scheme is. everything we do, we want a possibility. We want the highest odds in Vegas that any time we have a ball, we can score from any spot on the field, including if we just do a dive play through the three gap.
Well,
that could be a touchdown.
Has that worked?
And with Mendenhall, it can be a touchdown.
Has it
worked? Damn right.
Has it worked?
Has what worked?
Has that worked?
No,
we don't have a consistent
running
game.
So far as we win games.
Right. So I think that what Tomlin did with Mendenhall actually, to me, was actually really smart. And I know that we get frustrated because we don't run enough. But Rashard Mendenhall ran the ball, I think, over 390 times last year, which is the tipping point for running backs at which when you run them that many times, their play degrades a lot and they end up probably getting injured the next year. I'll have to look up the exact –
Their play degrades the following year?
The following year, yeah.
Okay.
And then they get injured. It's too many carries in a year. They've been statistics on this, and I know we went over the DVOA stuff.
Right. It's like they play a season and a half in one season.
Right. Right, and so it's just too much to a running back. I think we probably should have seen more Redmond this year. You know, I agree that we should have seen more running this year, although I don't think that it hurt us in any game. I don't think you can point – I can't point to a game this year in which you could say we lost because we didn't run the ball.
It's just a different style of offense.
Right, right. So I think we should have seen more Redmond this year, and it sucks that Mendenhall is hurt now because with an ACL tear like he has and given the amount of punishment he's taken over the past couple of years, you know, the question now becomes, here's a guy who's going to go into the last year of his rookie contract next year. Coming off of this knee injury, he's going to spend probably half the season, you know, just trying to work it out. Who knows what the future for him is
young,
on this team.
He's young and he's athletic. I mean, just like Joe said, I mean, he's an athlete. He's a specimen. I got to believe he's going to come back. I'm going to say fine. I mean, maybe he loses a little bit, but I think he'd come back fine.
Yeah. I hope so, you know, because I think the most likely scenario is that the Steelers aren't going to re-sign him next year, given the injury now. And he probably won't come back and you know, play spectacularly. So, you know, it's going to be tough. That's a tough situation. But, all right, so let's move on. I want to talk to you guys about kind of the big picture here. Like where the Steelers stand. And here's my question for you to start this talk about the playoffs, right? What would be the Steelers overachieving in the playoffs? What would be the Steelers underachieving in the playoffs? And what is your kind of expectation for this team in the playoffs? So I'll start with you. Let's start with you. What is underachieving to you?
Underachieving is, elimination by the Ravens.
I knew you were going to say that.
Or before that.
By the way, okay.
Or before that. I don't think we can't face – can we face the Ravens in the championship?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll take elimination by the Patriots. I think I could swallow that again. Even though it would – I mean, that's not – it's not really allowed either. But, you know, I think failure in Denver is just – you know,
that's up there with the
Saints going to Seattle and losing. I mean, that just shouldn't happen.
Right.
So elimination by the Ravens. I don't know how I get through the off season.
Right.
I really don't know. I may have to get a psychiatrist.
So is that just you speaking as kind of like this, like, there's two ways of looking at it, right? There's
I'm
like
not
the,
looking at it as an analyst, as a right. football. Like, I'm a Steeler fan. Okay? I can't stand the damn Ravens. I cannot stand the thought of them beating the Steelers again and moving on in the playoffs. I can't get past that. So if they get eliminated by the Ravens, even though it's on the road, even though we beat their ass in how many times and sent their asses packing and their fans keep coming back for more, I'm telling you, I don't know how I'd swallow that pill.
All right. Interesting. Mike? What would be underachieving to you for the Steelers?
Okay. Losing to Denver, definitely underachieving. Mm-hmm. Going to New England and losing to New England, if New England doesn't make it to the Super Bowl, I think that's underachieving. Meaning I can accept going 12-4 and losing to the team that makes this
that wins
the AFC, basically.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's pretty good. You're 12-4, and you're kind of like the number two you know, even if you don't get to the championship game. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. But I agree with Joe. Losing to the Ravens is underachieving because, look, if it sets up where Pittsburgh goes to Baltimore, I don't know about you guys right now, but that is exactly what I want. I want to look forward to that week of football. I want to watch all the pregame, all the talk radio shows and everything and just gear up for that game and then sit in front of it and watch it for 3 hours and see how it unfolds, because you got to believe that the Steelers are thinking, the players and the coaches are thinking, this is right where we want them. Sure, you won the division, you swept us, but now we're going to knock your asses out of the playoffs. And so, and one thing I want to say, one thing about the playoffs coming up again. First of all, I like that we're not the first game. I can't stand when you're the first game and you're out of the playoffs before any, and if you lose, you're out of the playoffs before anyone else even plays. It's almost as if you didn't even make the playoffs. You're sitting home with all the rest of the teams. So at least we last through the weekend by playing the last game. That's good. The other good thing is the first game, Cincinnati at Houston. If Cincinnati happens to win and we got to pull for this, then that means Cincinnati goes to New England, and therefore we would go to Baltimore if we win. And when that sets up for that divisional playoff round, if that's what it is, if for by any chance Cincinnati beats New England and we beat Baltimore, then we get the home championship game, which would be interesting.
But that's not likely.
Hey, it's not. It's far-fetched. But come on, you know I always root for onside kicks and Hail Marys and all that stuff.
Wait a second. You're telling me Cincinnati has – I mean, look, Cincinnati looked like crap against the Ravens. They looked like they were not ready for that type of playoff-style atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say
got,
that,
they
though.
Got, they, now they got that under their belt, though. Okay,
they, so
now
with they got them, some.
They can't keep up with New England.
They're talking about New England. First of all, can they win against Houston?
Well, sure.
Yes, they can beat Houston. Right. Absolutely. Houston is lethargic.
They can't beat New England, though. That's the problem.
Why are you saying they can't?
They can't keep up with them. And they won't be able to put up – and their offense, while it's good, they'll get stopped by that New England defense. They will. I mean, I'm not trusting two rookies – to go into New England and beat Tom Brady.
That's exactly the kind of people that can go win that game.
No, I totally disagree with you there.
I'm not saying I expect it to happen. I'm just saying I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, there's no way.
I mean, I don't think they get out of Houston, to be honest with you. I don't think that they can beat Houston.
Oh, given the way they looked last week against the Ravens, they looked terrible. But I'm chalking a lot of that up to.
They didn't look terrible, though, Joe. They hung in there with them. They got down early because they gave up a big Ray Rice run. But then they got back in the game, and they were driving ready to, I think, take the lead. They were down, 17-13? Was that the score?
Yeah, and then they threw the –
and they fumbled. I mean, it's kind of a fluke. All guy gets hit from behind where he doesn't see it coming. And then they give up another big Ray Rice run.
Rice again.
I know, but, you know, they were hanging in there.
So I think they can take – Houston because Houston – I mean, Houston is – they're in the playoffs, but they're not in the – the reason they're in the playoffs is not part of their team right now. So, they're just not the same team. And then this thing about them going up to New England, I mean, for a team like Cincinnati, I think it's a bigger challenge for them – to beat the Ravens than it is to beat
I actually think nobody
can stop Brady. Come on, man. Brady's been stopped all year long.
I don't think nobody can stop Brady. I think Cincinnati can't stop Brady. They're a team that's going to play scared. They're not going to go out there and play with nothing to lose. They're going to go play scared against them, and they're just going to get their ass kicked. We've seen teams like this play Brady in the playoffs, and they get clobbered. What is underachieving?
Yeah, I want to hear that. Go ahead.
Okay, so to me, obviously losing to Denver, underachieving. The only other thing to me that's underachieving is if you lose to New England. This is a team that's built to beat a team like that. I know it would be on the road. It would be a tough win for this team to get. But if you lose to New England, then that means that the LeBeau experiment failed in the playoffs ultimately. And this team that was built to stop the pass, and we got Keenan Lewis and we got William Gay finally, these two young guys, Cortez Allen Curtis Brown, and we have an offense that can play against that defense. That to me is underachieving. So now I guess we'll go to.
No. You don't get a pass on the. So what I just heard from you is you're good with the three time the three strikes and you're out, losses to the Ravens. That's not underachieving. That's not a big problem for you.
We'll get to that. So let's talk about.
What do you mean we'll get to that? I don't understand. So you say if we lose to New England, that's underachieving. Mm-hmm. And obviously if we lose to Denver, it's underachieving. But what if we lose to the Ravens either in the divisional or AFC championship game? You're not ready to answer that right now?
I will answer that in a later segment.
Okay.
So let's talk about what would be overachieving for this team.
Okay.
I guess I'll start with you, Mike.
Overachieving. I mean, I don't know if this team can really overachieve. I think that if they went on to win the Super Bowl against, let's say, Green Bay or New Orleans, that would probably be the highest of highs, you know, where maybe they'd be a 7-point underdog, let's say, and they end up and let's say they win that game. A lot of people would think that's overachieving, but for us, I mean, we watched them all season. I think that most Steeler fans feel like us and feel like they have the capability or they have the tools to be able to win to go on a streak like that in the playoffs, winning the AFC and then being either New Orleans or Green Bay in a game where they're 7-point underdogs. We feel that they're built to do that, but for whatever reason, they just really haven't put it together this season, or at least consistently. We've seen flashes of it. So.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know if anything would be overachieving. I mean, maybe okay. Just the whole consistent run to see him play four great games in a row. Maybe call that overachieving.
So would a run of, let's say it's New England divisional round, or well, Denver, then New England divisional round, Baltimore championship game, Green Bay Super Bowl, win all those games. That's not an overachievement to you. That's.
I mean, that would be awesome, and we would say, oh, greatest run ever, maybe greater than 2005. We'd be the, you know, Joe would be on his bandwagon, gloating. He'd be on his gloat fest, definitely. and you know, a lot of people might think it's overachieving, but I think that's in him. I think it's possible, so I wouldn't call it overachieving. I'd call it more of a great achievement. How's that?
Nice. Joe, is there anything the Steelers can do in this playoff run to overachieve in your eyes?
Well, you know, when you got a team that's a contender like this, then your expectations are, and this is why I'm so, hey, you listen to me and you think I'm negative about the Steelers. The Steelers, I have very high expectations, of these Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think they're unrealistic expectations, and so, you know, to sit here and say, well, you know, I think, you know, winning the Super Bowl, yeah, that's out of there. You know, they're not capable of that, so that would be an overachievement.
Mm-hmm.
No, I kind of agree with Mike on that. You know, you're a 12-4 team, and you're a 5 seed by virtue of a tiebreaker. And so, you know, if the Steelers go on the AFC run that we, you know, that is the obvious run,
mm-hmm.
and then they take out, one of those two hot offenses in the other league, the Saints or the Packers, you know, that's a great achievement. And this will be regarded as then by virtue of the Super Bowl opponent. But see, the last two Super Bowls, we talk about the 2005 as one of the greatest runs, but this, even though the Seahawks were the number one seed, they weren't regarded as a great team. Okay? The Packers are regarded as a great team. The Saints were regarded a couple years ago when they went to the Super Bowl and won it. They were regarded as a great team, as they are once again today. And so if the Steelers take them out, that's along the lines of, hey, you just beat the 70s Cowboys in the Super Bowl. Okay, that's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same thing as beating the 79 Rams, okay, who came out of nowhere. You beat the Cowboys twice in four. You're a badass team. You're a team for the year. So that's one of the things that's kind of, you know, been missing out of these last two Super Bowl wins is the great opponent. So this Super Bowl would have that great opponent, assuming it's Packers or Saints,
mm-hmm.
It'll have that great opponent flavor. And they take them down, It means for great celebration. The team will win itself incredible accolades that will then elevate the other two previous Super Bowls of this era, elevate them to another level. And then, of course, you touched on this earlier. This would become one of my great – I mean, as I said, I don't know how I come back from the loss in Baltimore. I don't know how I ever come down from that high, man. I mean, I'm talking about I might have to commission like a 12-foot by 12-foot terrible towel so I could be the most obnoxious guy in all of the country waving the biggest terrible towel in everybody's face no matter where I go. I don't know what I would do. But, this would be a lot of fun. This would probably be, as I alluded to in a previous podcast, probably be the most fun that I've ever had with a Super Bowl win, certainly since the 70s.
So to me, what overachieving to me means that the Steelers would be, winning the Super Bowl, you could say, is that overachieving. To me, that depends on the run that they make. I would think that it would be overachieving of this team to beat the Ravens on their way to winning the Super Bowl. That's the only thing I can think of.
Why? How come? Explain.
So this team is built to do one thing. That's, you know, we're built to stop Tom Brady. We're built to stop Drew Brees. And we're built to stop Aaron Rodgers. We do not match up well with the likes of Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens. And we've seen that. At least once this year. I don't know if I'd go back to the first game and say, well, okay, you know, they blew us out, you know, and that means something. I'm not ready to say if that means something, but they play us tough and they play us the right way. They try to out physical us. They know us well. They don't get away from their game plan when they play us like they do with other teams. You're not going to see Ray Rice have a stat line of, you know, 7 carries for 20 yards against the Steelers. He's going to have 27 carries. They play us the right way. And that's, to me, the most dangerous opponent that we're going to face. I'm not afraid of Tom Brady, even in New England. I'm not afraid of facing Aaron Rodgers on a track in Indianapolis or Drew Brees in that offense. I'm not afraid of that stuff. That falls into LeBeau's wheelhouse, this year. Going into Baltimore, beating that team that, you know, has our number, quote unquote, but in their house where they haven't lost all year, that's going to be really hard, man. I mean, you know, especially with the team being as banged up as they are. And I talked about, we have two concerns going into this playoff run. I've talked about this all year. Hockey stick, right? At some point, this thing turns around and we go. And I said there's two reasons why that's going to happen. Okay. The turnover thing has to turn around at some point. And so does the injury thing. You have to stop getting so many injuries at some point, because at some point, the injury bug has to stop biting. Well, you know what? The injury bug ain't stopping anytime soon. Cortez Allen will not play this week. Rashad Mendenhall is out for the season. Ben Roethlisberger was injured a couple of weeks, and we're still, you know, all wondering whether or not he has a gimpy ankle. I know he looked fine on Sunday. But, you know, again, we're all taking a wait-and-see approach on that. Pouncey's been injured. Woodley hasn't played a game since Arizona, or a full game since Arizona. Harrison and Woodley haven't played together. The injury problem is not going away. It's going to stay there. And, you know, coming out of – to me, winning in Denver really is not enough. We have to win in Denver and stay healthy. You know, because we can't afford another key player to go down. And I know Mendenhall is not that big a deal, but, you know, what if Ike Taylor goes down in Denver? Or what if Mike Wallace goes down in Denver? This season is up in flames then. You can't win without those guys, you know? So that's what worries me. And the other thing is the turnover battle. You know, the turnovers are not coming. And I think at some point we as Steelers fans have to acknowledge that we're just not going to be a team that gets a lot of turnovers. We're going to have to just win ugly the entire way. And I'm fine with that against teams like I said, against the spread offenses. We can't win turning the ball over against Baltimore. And we showed that two times this year. We lost the turnover battle in both games. We lost turnover in both games.
We had the game in Pittsburgh. We had it put away. They just gave it up. Defense gave it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you could say we lost that game, and we're all going to go back to that William Gay pass and say, well, that's the reason we lost. And that is the reason. Ultimately, the last play of the game is, but there's a lot of things that led up to that point. that made it that close.
You can say that about every loss in the book. Come on. But,
I mean, that was really that whole drive. I mean, we said it at the time. You give Flacco the ball with, what was it, 80 yards, 90 yards to go, and he's got to score a touchdown. Was that it? He had to score a touchdown, or could they tie with a field goal?
Yeah, he had to score a touchdown to win, and he had like 2 minutes to go.
Could they tie with a field goal? I don't remember.
No.
I don't know how we gave that up.
They won by 3.
It's terrible.
Yeah. No, it's rough. And look, losing to Baltimore for a third time is going to be tough.
But I don't know why you say that's overachieving, because in the first game, I mean, it was definitely Ray Rice, all Ray Rice and whatever. He beat us basically. And then it got out of hand with turnovers. And in the second game, we just said, I mean, we basically had it won. So I don't put it down as Baltimore's got the Steelers number. Sure, they won the two games this year, but. I think the revenge factor and everything and the chip on your shoulder, I just like the Steelers' chances.
Let me ask you this. Are the Steelers going to be healthier than they were in the second meeting, in this meeting, as a football team?
Healthier, right? Are they going to be healthier in the playoff game versus which game?
Well, possibly. Versus the second one.
Because a key component missing in the whole game was Woodley.
Right.
Now, so the big question is, can Woodley play in the form he was playing earlier in the season? Because
that's,
if he is,
right,
that changes,
that's a huge thing.
That changes,
but that's my question. Right now, do you think that that it's more likely he's going to play like that, or he's going to play like a watered down version of that? To me, it's more likely he's going to play like the watered down version, right? And the second thing is, can we win the turnover battle in Baltimore?
I don't think so.
I think if the ball bounces to
one of your guys or one of their guys. Come on, sooner or later, the ball's going to bounce to our guy.
It's not.
It's got to. It's the yin and yang of the universe. It must. The pendulum must swing back the other way. Seen it happen 1,000 times. Just like I told you that the Bears of, 2002 or whatever that was, and the 2005 Bengals and every one of these damn teams, including this year's San Francisco 49ers, will not get through the playoffs based on their plus 35 turnover ratio
season.
We will not go through the playoffs with our minus 10.
I agree with that.
It's not going to happen.
You see, we've seen too much. I agree with you that turnovers are not something you can count on. But losing turnovers or not getting turnovers, we've seen too – it's been too long now. You can't go through 16 weeks of the season.
You can't.
And if they won the final four, it's going to turn around.
Why? It's all you're talking about is law of averages here.
Right.
Okay?
We know the average now.
You're not going to get your plus 3 every damn game. Sooner or later, you're not going to get your minus 3 every damn game.
We've seen the average.
It's got to happen.
It's going to turn around next season.
It's going to turn around next season.
Oh, you guys are blowing.
I agree with you, Mike.
I think that if we go to Baltimore, I think we either go even on turnovers or we're minus 1, which would be fine. Just like you said earlier, we can.
We can't pick off Joe Flacco. That's what you're saying. It's odd. He's such a cool character. It's impossible to pick him off.
Oh, we might pick – how about this? We pick him off twice. We pick him off twice, but we throw an interception and fumble ball twice.
We're going to rob him blind.
Mike, go ahead.
We pick off twice. However, Ben throws an interception and we fumble twice. That's just the way this team has been the whole season.
That's just the way it is. Yeah, I don't know any other way to put it.
You know what? You need to close the window and keep style points inside. Stop turning a damn ball over.
Right.
Take care of business.
Well, okay, so that's my.
You don't like sloppy points.
You don't like that. All right, let's take a break. We need to take a break here because we're a little long here. We come back, we will finally get to what we expect. What are our expectations of the Steelers in this playoffs? Right after this. All right, back here on Steeler Country, guys. Before we left, we said we're gonna give our expectations. So, Joe. Based on your what is overachieving to you, or excuse me, what underachieving to you is losing to Baltimore or losing to Denver. So, an overachieving is winning the Super Bowl in dominating fashion. So, what is your expectation? And can I assume then that there is some part of you that feels like this team is susceptible to Tom Brady in New England?
I mean, if I'm going to be honest, and I'm not going to just play Joe the Steeler fan.
Right.
then I'm going to say, look, you know, I mean, there, you know, after this week, elimination is a distinct possibility, man. I mean, you know, it's coming down to what everybody knows it's going to be. It's going to be either the Steelers, the Patriots, or the Ravens that come out of the AFC. We're only one of those three. So there's two out of three shots that it ain't going to be us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then you got a couple of really hot numbers going on over there in the NFC that are lighting it up. You know, so, and everybody pretty much figures it's going to be one of those two coming out of that side.
Right.
And, you know, conventional wisdom is that side wins it all. So, you know, we're one out of five of those. Okay. So, I mean, honest to God, you go into playoffs, you got to enjoy the playoffs for what they are. It's, you know, it's the best part of the season. And out of how many playoff teams are there? There's, six in each league or eight in each league?
Six.
12 total.
So there's 12 total. So, I mean, 11 teams are going home. Their last game's going to be a loss till next year.
Yep.
That's just the reality of it. And we were one of those 11 last year too.
Yep.
I think if you look at the season, then you figure the Steelers get eliminated somewhere in the playoffs. They don't make it out of the AFC. If you look at this season, even though it's 12-4, if you look at the body of work that this team has put out.
And the road.
And being on the road.
Right.
And our record on the road is like, I don't know.
5-3.
Then you figure this team is out in the playoffs. Now, having said that, here's the hopeful part of me, okay? No, I mean, really and truly, the team since 2005, I mean, the team is resilient. The team has guts. And you never know when that's going to show up. And I do think it's a manifestation of a couple of things. I think it burns inside of Ben Roethlisberger to start. I think that 2005 season is delivered by Ben Roethlisberger and the likes of Hines Ward. And I think that fire has spread into some of these other players now. I think it burns in Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget this. Mike Wallace didn't win a Super Bowl. Rashard Mendenhall didn't.
I'm not talking about winning a Super Bowl. I'm talking about the will to win. The will to step up, to play beyond what you've done all year. Joe Green used to say, you know, the regular season we play for the fans, the postseason is for us.
Right.
Okay. There are certain teams that just crank it to a different level in the postseason. And I think these Steelers are one of them. I think last year, was a good example. I think 2005 was a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Even 2008. They do well in the postseason.
Right.
They do. And I think they're going to be formidable to take out in the postseason, even this year. So that's the hopeful part of me, is that this group of Steelers is a bunch of badasses who want to win, who have a point to prove. They don't have targets on their back. They're the number five seed, and nobody's talking about them. And they're going to go beat Denver, who everybody thinks is a big joke, in the playoffs. So, you know, they're going to have plenty to prove. So I'm hopeful for that. So the hopeful part of me is these guys truly shock the world and bring home their seventh trophy. And, you know, the whole damn world since the late 70s are ho-hum. The Steelers won another Super Bowl, and we're sick of them. Won't they just go away? Okay. And so I think we're back to that now. I think we've been back to that. The media and lots of the football world is like, you know, won't these damn Steelers just go away? Okay. And they don't need their seventh trophy. We're sick of them, you know, sticking in our faces all the time. You know, me with my, I got a coffee cup with a Super Bowl trophy on it. For every day of the week, you know, I'll be doing that next year if we come home with number seven. So, yeah, there's all of that. So expectations, your gut is, hey, they're going to get eliminated in the playoffs because they haven't played strong enough all year to do it. but the hopeful part of me is that they're going to take it to the next level because that's the kind of team that they are.
Mike, what are your expectations for the playoff run?
Okay, I have trouble separating my expectations from what I hope. Right. But let me just go through it this way. I hope the Steelers beat Denver. I expect them to beat Denver. A lot of people expect them to beat Denver, so that's not a surprise. Then let's say they go to Baltimore next. Well, I expect that they beat Baltimore, just like I said earlier. I mean, they got the revenge factor. They had him in the second game. They got him right where they want him. They want to, you know, okay, sure, you won the division. Now we're going to put you out of the playoffs. So I expect them to go into Baltimore and beat Baltimore. Now we come to the championship game, and let's say it's against New England. I hope they beat New England. I don't like losing to New England. And I don't want New England to go back to the Super Bowl. So it comes down to Dick LeBeau versus Belichick, because Dick LeBeau had his number in the game in the regular season, because we shut down Brady, you know, that press coverage that worked great. And you got to think that LeBeau's going to come out and do it again. And Belichick's going to try to come up with something to do something different. So what do I expect there? What do I expect Belichick to beat LeBeau this time? I don't know. I don't know what, you know, I guess I'm going to be hopeful that LeBeau can continue it and they rattle Brady. We get into the playoffs. So I'm going to say that's what I expect. And now going into the Super Bowl, just like you said, Tony, you can't wait for the Steelers to have to really play the Packers again to prove that this press coverage can work against these high flying passing teams. And so, I'm going to go on and say I expect them to be able to play the Packers well and win the Super Bowl. How's that?
Yeah. All right. I like that. I like that. Yeah. Here's what I expect from this team. The media has begun this. This has been like the overwhelming talk among the media has been, is this the year when the NFL has finally flipped? It used to be defense wins championships. Now is it offense wins championships. What I expect of the Pittsburgh Steelers is that anytime they face that team, the team with an offense but no defense, they put that to bed. They put that to bed. You need a defense to win championships in the NFL. Still, if you have a dominating defense in the NFL, you can still beat any of the good teams, provided you have a quarterback who won't completely screw it up for you. The Steelers have an offense capable of putting up points, maybe not in the style or in the numbers that the Packers or the Patriots or the Saints do, but it's good enough because they have a defense that is capable of shutting those offenses down. And so my expectation for this team is if you put this Steeler defense in front of Tom Brady, in front of Aaron Rodgers, in front of Drew Brees, I expect them to win those games. Anything else, anything can happen in those games, outside of Tebow, clearly. That's my expectation for this team.
Hey, one other thing I forgot, just real quick. I expect the offense. Getting in the playoffs, they're going to be on the big stage. Ben, I mean, if Ben can get healthy, if he's really healthy, I expect him to go out with something to prove. And then I expect that Wallace and Sanders get more involved, like Antonio Brown. I mean, I'd like to see them getting 3 and 4 catches each a game in the playoffs. And this offense really get high flying. I know that we talked about wanting to see more run, but I expect that Bruce, Ben, the receivers, and even Hines getting a little bit, you know, maybe in his, possibly his last season, you know, a high flying offense, that this offense proves that they can play with some of the better offenses.
Well, that's what I love about Ben is that, you know, he seems to play better in games when the game gets closer and closer to on the line. He plays better and better. You know, it's like that 2008 thing we said, you know, this team, the offense just finds a way to do it at the end of games 2 minutes ago. Finally, they turn it on. And I think that has a lot to do with Ben and the fact that he's a competitor and he, you know, when it's time for him to make plays, he makes plays and the playoffs and in the playoffs, he plays his best games. Even going back to last season, you know, he played a good game against Baltimore, a good game against the Jets. And I know in the Super Bowl, you know, there were some down moments in that game, but he was a big reason why they were able to come back in that game and nearly had a chance to win it. Like you said, Mike, I expect that he's going to turn it on this year, in the playoffs and this offense, which, you know, has been a little bit inconsistent. I expect to see more consistency out of him. All right.
Well, you're singing my tune there, Tony, with the defense wins championships. I hope that's still true. I know exactly where you're going. I mean, it's a hell of a lot. You gotta admit, dude, it's a hell of a lot harder for a defense to win a championship given the horseshit rules that the NFL is dishing out week in and week out. Come on, man. I mean, you cover a receiver, you're just as likely to have a first and goal without the ball ever getting anywhere near the damn receiver. Come on, man. And they're putting it up there, you know, 30, 40 times a game, 50 times a game. And on any single one of those plays, they could call your guys for pass interference. That's number one. Number two, you hit a guy. You make a tackle. Okay. You make a tackle. Well, at the, you know, forget about all the other BS outside the game itself. You know, you make a tackle on 3rd and 25 and all of a sudden it's an automatic first down because, you know, you grab the guy the wrong way or something. Come on, man. We're not hitting men below the belt or nothing here. We're making a freaking tackle, for God's sakes. Okay? So, you know, defense wins championships. Yeah, it sure as hell used to. I don't know that it still can. This may be the year. And you know what? The media is celebrating it. They think it's so freaking great. I would love nothing more. It'd just be another thing for me to gloat about. We could take out a Tom Brady and then take out one of them too. Either the Packers or the Saints, Breeze or Rodgers, and just put that whole dumbass mystery to bed. But keep in mind though that the deck is stacked against that.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see defense win championships again because the league is getting to the high flying. I mean, it's almost like a basketball game. Or an arena football game. And it's always intriguing when you have these high-flying offenses have to go up against a good defense. Who's going to win the battle? I mean, even going back to like the 85 Dolphins playing the 85 Bears. You know, that was an intriguing Monday night game, and the offense came up on top that time.
Right. All right. We got an email. Let's read the email here. We got an email from Neil, who wrote in during the games, the Steelers coming into this week had a chance at not only the number one seed, but the number two seed in the division title. And what the Steelers needed was for, first of all, New England to lose, which nearly happened. Buffalo has a 21-0 lead in that game in the first half. They somehow blow it by giving up 50 unanswered, or 49. So we go into the late games knowing that all we can do is get the two seed and win the division. We need the Bengals to beat the Ravens. Now, at this point, the Bengals still have something to play for, even though the Jets lost, because their scenario to get in is if one of Oakland or Denver loses. So they still have to play. They can scoreboard watch a little bit. They still have to play against Baltimore. They go down early in that game, and Neil writes in to say, if we ever needed Cincy to pull one of these, to pull one out of their asses, it's today, of course, assuming our boys can hold on. The Bungles are within 8 with 3 minutes left, and Redmond fumbles again as I write this email. Damn, I'm out. You know, it's funny going back to that moment, you know, like it was a third quarter. Late third quarter-ish, things start to turn around. I mean, the Steelers were ahead for the entire game against Cleveland, never comfortably ahead, but ahead the entire game. So I think a lot of us were watching that Cincinnati-Baltimore game more intently. And Cincinnati, I know they started that game slowly, but they were coming back there at the end, and they had a chance to win.
Well, and we had the two games on at the same time.
Yeah.
And you'll recall that they were, for a little while, they were inexplicably connected. It was like the same things were happening at the same moment.
That's right.
In the two games. If you could go back and play those two games back at the same time, you will see that the Steelers had made a big key first down and so did the Bengals. And it looked like things were starting to move in our direction. And then Redmond fumbles and the Bengals turn the ball over or give up a big run to Ray Rice, something.
Right. No, it was a fumble.
It was
the fumble. They both fumbled like within seconds of each other.
It was literally within seconds. So it was an interesting afternoon, but as it turned out, nothing really mattered.
Yeah. But that went back to the first quarter also. I think both, like, the Steelers missed a field goal and the Bengals missed a field goal.
Yeah.
Right? Like, in the same minute, it seemed like.
You know, what really pissed me off about the Bengals in that game is they really lost that game on two plays, right?
Yeah, two runs to Ray Rice.
And it's the same play twice. Ray Rice, off tackle, touchdown. Ray Rice, off tackle, touchdown. You know, they had a real chance to win that game. It was at home. It was in front of a packed house. It was for them to get into the playoffs. And it really makes me think less of that team because still now, Baltimore is not playing well going into the playoffs. They're still as vulnerable as they have ever been. Well, we're having power outages here. Are you still with me, Mike?
So anyway, I'm glad that the Bengals did not win that game because think about this. And maybe we said this early in the season, but at this point now, we definitely want to go into Baltimore and beat Baltimore. I would not want to be in a situation where we have a home game against Baltimore and they come in and beat us for the third time this season. I don't like that at all. I'd rather go to their house and knock them out of the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we all would like that. It's about.
Well, that's the coldest way to serve it. And vengeance, as we know from, if you're a Star Trek fan, Ricardo Montalban.
You can admit that.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess do we have anything else really we want to talk about in this podcast? I guess. Go ahead, Joe.
I have one more thing, but we could do it at the end. I want to just do predictions for the four games this weekend.
Yeah, this is the end. Oh, okay, let's do this. I've already predicted all of these. I'm going to ask you guys for the line that you think Vegas has given to all four of the games.
And make your pick also.
What's that?
And make your pick also.
Yeah, okay, we'll make our picks as well. All right, we'll start with the first game. Cincinnati and Houston. What is the line for this game? Obviously, if you don't know the line is, right? If you thought that Houston was going to win by 7, or that's a betting line. And again, this is not necessarily your prediction for the game. This is what is going to get the most bets on either side, right? Okay, so Joe, I guess I'll start with you. Give me your line for...
Yeah, I'm going to guess Vegas has got Houston favored by 6.
Houston by 6, okay. Mike?
I think it has Houston by 3.
And I had Houston by 2.5.
Really?
And they have Houston by 3.
Oh, Mike.
Huh. Look at that.
Well done.
That's based on their quarterback. I mean, is Yates is going to play though, right?
Yates is going to play, yeah.
But
Then if I'm a betting man, given what I think, I would take Houston and give the 3.
So you think Houston's going to win that game?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't. I think Cincinnati's going
to win. I'm hoping Cincinnati wins it.
I think Houston has a real good chance of winning that game with Yates. As long as they don't screw it up, run the ball against the Bengals. Play. I mean, they have the Texans have one of the best defenses in football. They're right up there with us. That's what no one talks about them. If they can continue to play good defense, and that defense is not banged up, it's the offense that's banged up, I think they'll be fine. I like the Texans to win that game.
Now, 1 second here. I'm bringing up the Texans schedule because I believe, haven't they, did they lose their last 3 games?
Yeah, they backed in. They lost 2 in a row, I think.
No, 3. They lost to Carolina. Carolina 28-13, Indianapolis 19-16, Tennessee 23-22.
Well, every AFC team backed in except for New England, Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
Yeah. And Greenberg explained this morning that there's no such thing as backing in. You've earned your right to the playoffs whether you won earlier.
Oh, he is Greenberg. Way wrong on that.
Yeah, that's a Jets fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a Jets fan right there. That is a Jets fan.
I think he's right.
No, he's not right.
They won the game early.
That goes exactly against what you always talk about. You want to get hot at the end of the season.
Listen,
come on.
You get in. Backing your way in, but they earn their way into the playoffs. Now, just what I'm saying, they just lost 3 in a row. You think they're going to get anywhere in the playoffs now? No, they're not hot getting into it. That's why I'm picking them to lose. I don't know why you guys are picking them to win. Maybe because they're playing Cincinnati. That could be a factor. How did Cincinnati do?
There are no winners on that side.
Let me look at Cincinnati's at least last 3 or 4. As we go on to the next game.
Yeah,
go ahead,
let's
go for the next game.
This one is very interesting. Okay, so we've got Detroit at New Orleans. And I guess I'll go first on this one.
And before you do, just real quick, Cincinnati was 2-2 in the last four games.
Okay. So, Detroit and New Orleans, I went New Orleans by 10.5. Mike, what do you think?
I have, New Orleans by 6.5.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would have said, New Orleans by 9.5.
And it is New Orleans by 11.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Man, I'm way off.
That surprised me. I get, you know, it has to be a big line because, you know,
nobody's going to bet on
it. Yeah, no one can bet on it. If it's too big or it's not big enough, you know?
I mean, that's what it is. It's like, okay, how many points do you have to give before people start taking Detroit?
Detroit, yeah.
I was thinking 6.5 was enough, but I'm wrong.
I mean, I'll tell you what, 10.5, 11, right around there. I think the line was actually in this game was earlier today was 10.5, so it might have moved to 11. Yeah,
that's the game.
I picked this spot on when I picked it earlier.
Of all the games that could be a blowout, the Saints could blow them out bad.
Yeah.
Because they're not a disciplined team.
But at the same
time, they're not ready for the playoffs. And New Orleans is an experienced team. They're playing at home where they're unbelievable.
Right.
And they're on fire.
Right.
And they are just going to, I think they're just going to shred. I would give whatever points and take the Saints.
But if you're a betting man,
I'm taking the Saints.
I'd say this. You're giving up, but 10.5, you are, but with 10.5,
11.
You said 11. Lines are 11. You're right, 11. You're getting garbage touchdown points there.
Yeah.
You know, they're down by 17. They get a garbage touchdown. They make it 10. And then
you lose the bet.
You lose the bet.
Or Saints are up by 8 and they shut it down because they hold the ball and they run out the clock.
It's the playoffs. They're not shutting it down with 8. It's the Saints.
I mean, like late in the game.
I'm telling you, second quarter, they might be up by 4 scores.
Well, they could be against Detroit.
That's what I'm kind of halfway expecting that.
All right. So, I mean, I think we all predict the Saints to win that game, right? No one's breaking the lines in the upset.
Yeah. But, you know, based on my initial thinking, I would probably take the points, but I don't know anymore. You guys may have convinced me otherwise.
I'd give the points.
I'd take the points.
Saints give the points.
Okay, so Falcons at Giants. This is an interesting one. Neither of these teams played well this year. I think no one really believes in the Falcons. And the Giants snuck in right at the end. But they got a home game now. And they have a team that is respected because they have a team that is suited to beat the big boys, you know. Mike, I'll go to you first on this one.
Yeah, this is tough. Giants 9-7, but they get the home game against the 10-6 Falcons. Falcons seem like they're more, well, I don't know about more balanced, but anyway, I had the Falcons as my Super Bowl team going into the season, and I've never really believed it any time during the season. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I said it last week, and I still believe it, Eli Manning and the Giants are a team that could beat either the Saints or the Packers, but they're going to have to get there. And I was going with I'm going to pick the Giants to win the game, but you're asking for the line.
Yeah.
I think the line is Giants by 3.5.
3.5.
Yeah.
Joe, actually, I'll go. So this was an interesting one because my first thought was I thought Atlanta might be favored in this game. I was thinking, you know, probably not though. The Giants are home. The Giants have a well-built team. Atlanta's a fraud. I mean, Atlanta hasn't beat anybody this year. So I went Giants, and then I convinced myself a lot, and I went Giants by 5.5.
Well, my initial thought is Giants by a field goal or Giants by 2.5. But I'm trying to figure out what Vegas is thinking and what people are betting. The Giants won their last game. I don't know what the Falcons did. They win their last game?
Yeah, they blew out Tampa bad.
They blew out Tampa. So, I mean, you might see there's usually one road team that's favored. And if there's gonna be one, it might be that one. I think the Giants are gonna win the game straight up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing that Atlanta might be favored by 2.5.
Ooh, so the line on that game is Giants by 3. My initial
thought was
good.
Okay.
I think the Giants win that game. I'm not a believer in the Falcons this year. At all.
No, I agree. I think the Falcons are a fraud. I hope the Giants win because I think they can, you know, if they play their game, they can play with anybody.
And it sets up a great
game. Yeah, but a tendency to shoot themselves in the foot sometimes.
They do. Yeah, they do.
And it sets up – what does it set up?
It sets up a great Giants-Packers game later in the next week.
No, I guess what's the – that's not the dependent game, though. That's the
– Right.
Oh, it would be. Okay.
Well, I mean, the Saints would win, and then the Giants would get
– So then the Packers play the winner. If the Saints win, the Packers play the winner of that
of Giants
game. Giants go to Green Bay.
Yeah, and New Orleans goes to
– I think that's bad news for Green Bay. They get a cold weather team that can run the ball and play defense.
What do you think the chances are of a San Francisco versus the New York Giants AFC Championship or NFC Championship game?
Zero.
Zero? Yeah. No chance San Francisco beats New Orleans.
No. Zero.
Only for two reasons. One, San Francisco might have a chance just because slowing the whole game down, running the ball, playing good defense, rattling Drew Brees, maybe in bad weather, on grass. And the Saints have proven to what they went to St. Louis and lost, and they went to Tampa and lost. I mean, those are two bad teams that they lost to. Granted, it was earlier in the season, but they just kind of show that anything can happen.
All worries me is they're when they went west last year and lost.
Yeah, to Seattle.
Yeah, they could go west this year and lose too.
Yeah. All right,
but I don't think so.
Let's do Steelers Broncos. This is our game, Joe. What do you think Vegas has on a line? Or Steelers at Broncos?
I'm going to guess it's 14.5.
What? Okay. Whoa. That's big. Mike?
My initial thought was 6 for Steelers by 6 in a away game.
Yeah.
And Steelers haven't really been blowing anyone out. But based on, based on the Saints line being pretty big, I was thinking about changing it, but I'm going to keep it at 6.
So I had Pittsburgh. I wavered between... So my initial thought was 11, then I thought maybe 11.5, then I kept it at 11, and it's Pittsburgh by 9.
Hmm.
Oh, well, Steeler hate there.
Yeah, so.
Hate? I don't know, it's on the road.
Yeah.
I know, it's on the road and the Steelers haven't really blown out too many teams, but they did put up 27 on the Rams and they do hold teams to low scores, so I don't understand why it's so difficult to see the Steelers win them by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. No, I think that, Steelers by 9.
I think the Steelers are going to win by 24.
Yeah.
So, I can't imagine it's that hard for guys to figure they're going to win by 2 touchdowns.
I was surprised that the line didn't go double digits. You would have thought you might have to give up double digits to get people to bet on Tebow, but I don't know. Guess not. All right. Anything else this week?
I just want to, extend a thank you to the morons of the AFC. Thank you goes out to the Irsay family for firing the Polians. Oh yeah, come on. Before the Polians got there, the Indianapolis Colts were a doormat. They were always going to be a doormat. They had the likes of, who was that guy? Jeff George. Was that his name?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you could go through the list of all of the disappointments that had gone through. That had gone through Indianapolis, and I think with the Polians out of there, the Irsays don't know how to run a football team. They are going to screw things up in that town and for that team. Whether they get luck or they don't get luck, it's all downhill from here.
Man, bold statement.
Wow.
Oh yeah, no, that's I'm positive of it. Also, I have to thank the San Diego Chargers for keeping. There's one team getting rid of people that know what they're doing. Here's another team hanging on to somebody that's a proven guy that can't win. I mean, this guy can't win. Norv Turner, every year it's the same crap. Next year is going to be the same thing all over again. Halfway through the season, everybody will be going, what the hell happened in San Diego? They're so good. They got so much talent, but they suck. Okay, and that's what's going to happen again. So thank you for eliminating possible pot competition in the AFC to those two. And finally, Jerry Jones, who admits that all the losing is his fault for the last 15 years, but he's not interested in getting a GM and letting anybody else straighten out his mess. And so the Cowboys will continue to be the most talked about non-factor in all of sports, which finally, by the way, you heard me say this here on this podcast. 2 or 3 weeks ago, you finally heard Wilbon said it tonight, that for 15 years this team's done nothing. And the Redskins have actually won more playoff games than the Cowboys have since 1995 or 6 or whatever, you know, whatever, however many years.
Right.
But he did say 15 years, and they are. They are the most overrated, over-talked about, overhyped team. And at least when they were overhyped in the 70s, they were winning. Now they don't even win anything, and we got to hear about all their potential all summer long.
Well,
so I want to thank all of these idiots who continue to take contenders out of the Steelers' way, pave the way to trophies number 7 and 8.
And I want to thank you all out there in Steeler land for listening. We'll see you next week. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry.net is the website. Email address SteelerCountry@gmail.com, and the Twitter is twitter.com/SteelerCountry. We'll see you next week for more playoff talk.